Hi, this is Warwick Davis, and you're listening to the 5E Filibuster.
Everybody, welcome to a special Veterans Day Friday Filibuster. What that means, I'm not sure, but we at the Friday Filibuster, we'd just like to thank our veterans and our men and women of the armed forces. Is that correct, Friday Filibusterers? Yes?
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Yes, very good. Okay.
Yes.
Yay.
So that was a very sarcastic yay, Mac.
That was my enthusiasm.
Okay. All right.
Have you met Mac?
That's true. That's Mac's a pretty laid back guy. So, if there's any veterans out there, please don't take it. Mac's just laid back. So, you know, no worries.
That's always the decider, sarcasm or just laid back? One or the other.
So, anyway, we've got Mike Rubino with us.
Hello.
And please, nobody mention the Penguins Bruins score. He hasn't seen it.
If you're listening, do
if you're
not
listening now, please don't email us.
Don't say the score.
Don't post it in the forum. And Eric Aschberschlager.
Hello.
And Mac McIntyre.
Hi there.
All right. So, you know the drill. We'll just kind of burn through some time, get you ready for your weekend. And before we started, I want to just say two words to you gentlemen, and we'll go from there. Ape nuts. Those are my two words throughout this filibuster. What is ape nuts, you might ask? Well, here's what it is. Well, I was reviewing the Blossom, 10 special episodes of Blossom. Somehow that ended up on my doorstep. But there was a scene where Tony Russo, Blossom's brother, was in the kitchen, and they had a cereal box. And you know how on sitcoms you can't show brand names on things? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes they'll black out letters or just totally change it. Well, they decided the stagehands or producers or whatever decided to put a box of grape nuts on the table, you know, but they blacked out the G and the R. So, you know, there's a scene and there's this box of cereal. It's called Ape Nuts. and then I was just thinking, there's probably a story behind that. We need a box of cereal in the scene. What do you have? Oh, we can't have grape nuts. So then they erased the G and it was rape nuts. <You know? laughs> we're stuck. It's either rape nuts or ape nuts. So I guess you go ape nuts.
And they certainly can't do the P.E. nuts.
Can't go peanuts either. Because that's an infringement on beloved cartoon strips.
Sure, so Charles Schultz, of course.
Food either way. So
was Tobias Funke the one doing the box design?
So I guess the lesson is you can't use grape nuts in your sitcoms, you know, and that's been a hard lesson. So, and that, of course, was the most amusing thing of that whole set. So,
Dave, this is a quick ambush topic that's probably going to crash and burn, but can you think of any other products where you'd have to black out a letter or letters that would make them inappropriate?
Oof, wow, that is
excellent. Uh-huh, boy.
Okay, we'll start off with a resident improv specialist, Mike Rubino. What do you have?
Well, you know, my process was think of the word that you want it to say and then find the product. Right. Like, work backwards.
Good.
Okay, I'll go Bass Ale, I suppose, right?
Okay, yeah, okay. That's a good one.
I guess it was Coke and you took away the E.
Yeah, that's good. Good.
Man.
Why don't you take away the E, you know?
No one's going to drink Oak. Come
that's
on.
Right.
Oak. Come on, Dave. Think, would you?
All right, Mac or Mike, you got to have something. What do you got?
Let's see. Well, it's not really a product, but one time, this is back when that movie Mr. Holland's Opus was in theaters.
That's right.
A movie marquee, the O was missing, so it just said Mr. Holland's Puss.
Very good.
True story.
It's good. I like it.
Sure, that wasn't an adult theater you happened to walk by.
Maybe that
was the grossest inappropriate. Mike, what's up? Come on. What do you got?
Would it help if we came up with a location that you could be coming up with this improv in?
No, I'm just
That's
trying
right.
to.
You're in a fish market. And you're a dentist.
This is a terrible ambush topic, and I can't.
It is. It was totally good fair.
And he took Bass Ale, so I'm like,
that's right.
Well, that was the easiest thing.
It was. That's right.
You can't just look around you. I mean, what do you have? What do you have in front of you?
I don't have any products around me at all. I live in a sitcom house.
All right. Well, Hey, what? If you come up with one later, feel free to.
Yeah, trust me, I'm going to be distracted the rest of this podcast.
All right,
and,
so,
and not just because the Penguins blanked.
Yeah, not because I don't know the score of the game either.
Just... the Penguins blanked the Bruins.
Oh, or maybe they blanked to the Bruins.
Or maybe they blanked to
who knows? I have no idea. Or do I?
Maybe we could do Mad Libs here, you know? The blank Penguins blanked to the blank Bruins, and Sidney Crosby blanked his blank. All right. So Eric, let's move from this awful digression.
Please, please.
What have you been up to?
Let's see. Well, caught the first couple episodes of the new Conan late night show.
Yes, and?
And it's good. I have to say, I've always liked Conan, although I never really watched his show, mostly because I'm not a late night TV guy. But, you know, the return of Conan, I felt a certain amount of responsibility because I watched the last week or so that he was on TV and, you know, felt a lot of sympathy for the guy. I had to do things for me. So I thought the first couple episodes are actually pretty funny. I think it's going to be an interesting fit on TBS because he seems to sort of own that market. I mean, I know that George Lopez has his show, but and I don't want to count him out, but I sort of do. So I think that's I know that's unfair. It's unfair, just like the Amber's topic.
He's not really funny though. I mean, if
that's kind of where I'm coming from.
He's not funny.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that there's certainly. Things have moved from network to cable in general. Obviously, you have the popularity of like The Daily Show and Colbert Report and stuff. So I think that Conan could certainly find an audience. I hope he does. I hope it isn't just a lot of kind of looky-loos and curiosity seekers.
Looky-loos, huh? I like that.
That's a good word.
It is.
And one that I'm sure you can remove several letters from to make something inappropriate. Not going to figure out how. But no, it was funny. They did some, you know, obviously the first episode, they did a lot of jokes about all the NBC situation and, you know, talking about how this is his second annual first episode and stuff like that. So, you know, it was good stuff. And it's good to see Andy Richter back in a more, you know, on the couch role with Conan. So,
now, did it feel like his old show? Because that's what I've heard. People said it felt like
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I think it doesn't have quite the, I don't know, network flash, I guess, of the Tonight Show. I mean, it feels like any of the late night talk shows. I mean, it's hard to distinguish them, frankly. But there's a little funny things. Like I like that, you know, their new band is called Whoever It Is and the Basic Cable Band.
Jimmy Mavino or whatever.
Mavino, that sounds right. And you know, they had Tom Hanks was on last night, and he's a big Conan supporter, so he did some stuff, including getting a whole bucket of water dumped on his head in a humpback whale gag that you probably wouldn't see on the Tonight Show. So anyway, yeah, so pretty good. I'll probably keep watching for a little while, DVRing it. I don't stay up till 11 o'clock anymore, so you know, but. I'll watch long enough that I don't feel guilty for not watching anymore. It's kind of my criteria right now.
All right.
I really enjoyed it, too. It's a lot more low-key than his Tonight Show was, but I think that's kind of a good thing.
Yeah, definitely.
I agree. Andy is kind of in danger of stealing the show away from Conan once or twice a night so far. So.
Yeah, and I've been a big Andy Richter fan for a long time. I mean, obviously, I've supported his TV shows that have all been canceled, so. Hopefully this one will stick because it's been a while for him.
Very cool. All right. Well, Mac, why don't you segue? What do you got going on?
All right. Well, here where I live, it's in New England. It's November. And no November in New England.
That's right. Only in New England. I think that's our new tourist trademark, you know? New England. It's only November in New England.
Isn't it November all year round in New England?
It really is, actually.
That's funny, kid, because I'm it's October 42nd here in New York. So,
sorry, Matt. Continue. What
I was getting at, it's a very special, very magical time of year. You know,
it is,
and because it's time for Super Mega Fest.
That's true. The New England version of Comic Con or something like that.
I jokingly called it the New England version of Comic-Con in the past, and that joke kind of came back and bit me. But, yeah, it's a big, you know, sci-fi comic book type of convention. There's a lot of music stuff they do there, too, and it's a lot of fun. And unlike the conventions that are in Boston, this one's in Framingham. There's parking, which is also good.
That's right.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun. We've got it's November 20th, 21st, and they're doing a Back to the Future reunion. So Christopher Lloyd and Leah Thompson are going to be there.
Nice.
Wow. And got a whole bunch of other actors. Peter Mayhew from Star Wars, Marina Sirtis from Star Trek. Fred Williamson, who's been in hundreds of movies, are all going to be there. And a whole bunch of other actors and musicians. What I find really interesting is a new feature this year. I got the website here open. You gotta, because it's their description is better than mine. But it's Star Wars speed dating.
Oh yes.
Okay. here's the description from the website. It says, "Are you tired of flying solo?
That's good.
Your love life frozen in carbonite?
Very nice.
We have the answer for you: Star Wars speed dating." 25 dates in less than a parsec.
Oh, Christ.
It's safe and confidential. It has had success for quite a few couples.
Quite a few.
For you too. Join the legendary G. Anakin and his crew as they help you navigate the asteroid field of love.
Can you fire your proton torpedo into her exhaust port?
I bet there's going to be more than a couple Chewbaccas in there.
given the largely male audience at these conventions, it's good. It's a good thing it's taking place in Massachusetts. I'm thinking
that's true. maybe like on the little cards you fill out, you know, which character do you most resemble? You know, probably an overwhelming amount of Bib Fortunas and Gamorrean cards.
Yeah. There might be a couple IG-88s. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Tall, skinny. Wow, that's nice. Are you gonna do some reporting from the field on that, Mac? You should infiltrate.
I don't know. Part of me is real curious to see like who would show up for this, but part of me is kind of terrified to see who would show up for this.
Star Wars speed dating.
Oh, man, Star Wars speed dating.
Dan, do you think people would show up in costumes?
I don't know, there's a photo of people in costumes. They're like a man and a woman dressed as a Jedi. And then there's a more professional-looking photo of a guy in a Darth Vader costume and a woman in a kind of a slutty version of a Stormtrooper costume.
Of course.
Is that even possible? That doesn't really seem form-fitting to me, a Stormtrooper armor. You know?
You should go half in a Tauntaun.
That's good. Half in a Tauntaun. Oh, man. I wonder how many I love you, I know. You know, there must be.
That's a good one.
Oh, enough. All right.
I wonder how many people at that speed dating event find out that they're brother and sister later.
That's right.
And scene.
Thank you.
All right, well, we definitely look forward to your report from the field. That'd be fantastic. All right, but you usually come away with some cool stuff from Super Mega Fest. I know I was bequeathed a Goonies trading card set for Christmas, which was fantastic. From
That's
Mr.
Right.
Mac. Did you get that at Super Mega Fest?
It was at a convention, but it was at a different one.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, all kinds of crazy collectibles at Super Mega Fest. Yeah.
Very nice. All right, Mike Rubino, how about you?
Let's see. I've been watching The Walking Dead. The second episode this week. Did you guys happen to see that at all?
Yep.
Yes, I did.
It was sort of, I thought it was sort of like a drop-off, and I guess a lot of people online are saying the same thing.
Interesting, because I thought it was actually more exciting than the first one.
Well, it was, it had more action, but I don't think it was up to snuff character story-wise, but I didn't hate it.
You're a hater.
I'm not a hater.
Stop drinking the haterade.
I just thought the pilot was so good that this one was a little like Michael Rooker's character. Really, I just could have like done without.
That's true.
That really was... racist random guy on a roof.
Which actually is a new Fox reality show coming.
Like a racist guy on a roof. But the thing I liked about the episode was that it was essentially Dawn of the Dead boiled down to like an hour.
Yeah,
like the entire plot of Dawn of the Dead in an hour, and they, you know, they put all that gore on themselves and walked around, which was shocking. like I couldn't believe I was watching that.
That's pretty gross.
and that they put it on TV. But hey, it was sweet. So I don't know. I it did officially get picked up for a second season, by the way.
Yes.
I know I mentioned that a couple weeks ago, but so I'm not as concerned now as I was when I watched it and was like, man, we're gonna be. Like, they're wrapping things up pretty rapidly.
Yeah, that's cleaned up in the ratings, so there's no – I mean, people
yeah.
are – like, there wasn't even a big drop-off in viewership, so.
No, so, yeah, I'm pretty pleased, though, overall with this show. I think it's – I know you guys talked about it last week, so I won't belabor the point, but
– Yeah, I agree. I think the second episode was not as strong as the first one, but I – it's kind of for the same reasons you did. I thought that the new characters seemed to be kind of more stereotypes than – really kind of interesting characters. But it did have that, you know, that cool scene near the end. Hopefully the show is more than just a few cool things that happen every episode, you know, interspersed with kind of so-so dialogue. But I don't know. There's promise.
Yeah, I guess I'm not asking too much. I like Rick as a lead guy. I think he's interesting. I like him as a head character. And then the zombie effects, and it's fast-moving. I don't know. I suppose that's all I kind of crave for in my zombie TV show. I'm a cheap date. So
yeah, well, I think
to be fair, it's the same stuff you ask from Mad Men, and you
that's true. Absolutely, absolutely true.
I guess
see a Don Draper zombie. That'd be fantastic.
That'd be super cool.
Just getting drunk and banging all the women zombies.
I think the thing I really like about the show, though, is since I review a lot of zombie movies for the site, and I've seen a lot recently, and it's sort of like I was getting a little worn down from zombie stuff, as much as I love the genre. But I guess this show is just so different in that it treats it so seriously and actually has depth to their emotions and everything, that it feels fresh even when they're just doing the same stuff that you see time and time again with zombie stuff. So that's why this last episode felt a little weird, because it was like all the other zombie stuff.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
But
I mean, it's anything I hadn't seen before, but
yeah. But, you know, still, they might as well have some crossover with the other AMC shows.
They should.
I think you're onto something.
Yeah, absolutely.
With Don Draper, and they can get that dude from Breaking Bad.
Right? That's right, Bryan Cranston. Get him on board. Yeah,
the cure for the zombie virus can be meth.
That's right. And Don Draper markets it. let's see. On my end, let's see. Just kind of watching the same old stuff, and I'll spare you from a Vampire Diaries update. But I do a little news report that I was happy to see. It's bittersweet, actually, because I kind of proclaimed the merits of Spartacus, Blood and Sand, the over-the-top Stars series that I really dug. And the main actor, Andy Whitfield, had come down with a non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They thought he beat it, but it returned pretty aggressively. So he had to cancel completely, bow out of the series. So now that definitely, the show aside, it's certainly an awful thing to happen. But it looks like Starz is going to continue with it, and they're recasting it. So that's just going to be interesting, I guess. I'm trying, like, obviously, there's some obvious example. You know, there's some examples of the Dukes of Hazzard with new cast members. You know, and Bewitched and so forth. But I mean, do those really work? I mean, can you? You know, you had a hit show. People really bought into it. Your main guy. You know, the titular character is going to be replaced. I'm just wondering. You know, can that work?
Well, are they replacing him, or is it? Just,
yeah, he's out. He's done.
I mean, is it like they're just going to pretend nothing happened? Or is it like a prequel or something?
They have a prequel that they shot, but season two, they're recasting for the Spartacus character, picking up from the first season. So it'll be the same character. Completely. So, and I can't think of a lot of examples of that.
Mission Impossible was like that.
Oh, yeah?
The very first season. I mean, the character had a different name, but Mr. Phelps was somebody else in the first season, some other actor who was lame, and then they got rid of him.
I mean, did he play the same character, though?
They gave him a different name, but they never explained. I mean, he was the same character.
Uh-huh.
They just gave him a different agent name, but never explained what happened to the old guy.
Well, I guess in Roseanne they did that, too. I think in Roseanne they swapped out the older sister, right? And then they brought her back.
And then they brought the first one back.
Yeah. That's right. So
on Babylon 5 they switched captains, but it was two different characters.
Yeah. So, yeah, you can get away with that, and you know that's easier to get away. But I mean, could you imagine like trading Richard Dean Anderson for another actor who played MacGyver. Yeah. Just be so maybe just bizarre. Well, regardless, you know, I certainly hope Andy Whitfield, you know, pulls through that, because that's certainly awful, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with the show. So, and that is the news. That is the news from my end. So let's move on to what we've been doing for the site. Mike, what do you have cooking?
I am working on the fourth season of The Fugitive, which I think I've reviewed all the other ones for the site, but this one is notable in that it's in color, which I guess is exciting if this were the 1960s. So yeah, the show's in color now, and this is the last season of the Fugitive, so he's getting closer to catching the one-armed man. That's about it. You know, every episode's pretty much the same. The fugitive wanders into a town, he gets caught up in somebody's personal business, and he tries to save the day or help them before he has to get chased out of town by the cops or Lieutenant Gerard or something like that.
All right. Wasn't the fugitive the one that kind of invented that formula?
It did, pretty much. I mean, at least there's nothing I know of that is like the fugitive before this. But yeah, I mean, it's common. It's a common formula now with the Hulk and everything. But yeah, the fugitive, he was a trailblazer. And it's a great show. I mean, for four seasons now, and it is just very formulaic. So it's like once you're into the formula, it's you can figure things out pretty quickly.
And as I recall, it's a heck of a final episode too, right?
I've never seen it, but the this is only season 4, part 1, so I don't even have the final episode yet. You got to wait a couple more months, I guess, for them to release the second. They've been splitting the seasons up in releases, so yeah, this is season 4, part 1. I'm sorry.
All right, how's it look?
Like- it looks pretty good. The color is, the color's nice, I guess. They remastered it and everything, so it looks pretty good. It's got this weird thing in the beginning, though, because the intro, which sort of explains the whole premise of the show, was in black and white. So now what they did was they just took, like, still images from the original black and white intro, and they just put, like, bright color gels over them.
Gotcha.
So it'll go, like, purple. It's like you're watching a test pattern. But, you know, it's interesting. I've never seen a show that went from black and white to color. I'm assuming it happened all the time back in the day, but
well, that's what Wikipedia's for. We'll have to research that and get back to you on that. Anything else?
No, it's all on my end.
All right, good. Mac, how about you?
I took the bullet for Mike Rubino here. The bullet was heading in his direction. I jumped right in front of him.
Oh yes!
Wow.
Because I reviewed the first season of V.
Oh, right.
I read that review, and it was... Well, good. Glad you felt my pain.
Yes. Boy, did I. Yeah, it's... I wanted to like the show. I went in with, hoping that it would be really good. But the show is just filled with so many moments that make you stop and go, hey, wait a minute. You know, it's like every scene is a, hey, wait a minute. You know? And it just kind of took me out of it. So,
as in what? Like, this doesn't make sense? Is that what you're talking about?
Right. This doesn't make sense. Or would people really act that way? Or, you know, why is this character doing that when he should be doing this? Or why aren't they asking this question? There was a lot of that. And, the aliens come down from outer space and they immediately broadcast their, you know, message of, oh, we come in peace and we've brought new technology and we're going to heal all your sickness and everything's going to be better, right? And, all around the world, and people in the streets all start applauding and cheering, and you're like, hooray, aliens. And it's like, no one is skeptical. No one does this take place in an alternate reality where no one on the planet Earth is, you know, a cynic? So that right there was kind of my first warning flag. And then, I don't know, there's a lot of like narrative shortcuts that they take, just, you know, lame excuses to get characters from point A to point B. They have the one teenage guy character. They want him to meet the writers, that is. They want him to meet the alien girl so they can have their little romance. So in the first episode, you know, they do a thing where the aliens are giving tours of the insides of their spaceships, and somehow our teenage guy manages to get onto one of the tours. And this is before the leader of the aliens does her first big TV interview. So you see, things are kind of, you know, skewed there and not quite working. So You know, again, stuff like that just really bug me. It's like, okay, the people are going inside the ship and they're taking tours, but we still don't know anything about the aliens. You know, it's
does that sound similar experience you had, Mike?
Yes. It was, yeah, I mean, the show makes no sense. There's no motivation for anybody to do anything, but they do it. Like, they just run around and revolt for no reason. I mean, it's a very flimsy premise. It feels like it's just going through whatever motions they feel like it needs to go through in terms of a show like that. But
yeah. People do what the script dictates, pretty much. That was
exactly.
Yeah.
And the writers are just following this generic alien formula without actually thinking things through. It just, I don't know. It's just painting by numbers, I feel.
All right. Well, not a ringing endorsement for V. That's unfortunate. All right. Eric, how about you?
I got my first Dragon Dynasty.
Yes. Welcome to the club. What is it?
Thank you. Thank you. It's a Jackie Chan movie called Robin B. Hood.
Oh, yeah. Is it a new one or an old one?
No, it's 2006, apparently.
Okay.
And it's he plays a thief who kind of gets mixed up in a kidnapping of a baby. I'm only about halfway through, so I can't speak of the whole movie. But it's over 2 hours long. It's a lot longer than you'd expect for something that's, you know, it's kind of like if you took a movie like, I don't know, The Pacifier or some whatever, like your standard U.S. baby and grown action star movie, and then just added a lot more like fight scenes.
So it's like a kid, it's like a kid flick type of thing.
No, it's not. It's just it does have a lot of those kinds of jokes. You know, the baby's crying. What do? Let's sing an inappropriate pop song. And, oh, there's a poopy diaper, that kind of stuff.
So it's a comedy? So it's a comedy?
There are comedy acts. There are comedy parts to it. I mean, there's funny parts. There's more dramatic parts. I think there's the triad is involved. I mean, it's a weird movie because it takes like a full, like 40 minutes to even get to the main plot. They have to kind of explain why these thieves are down on their luck and why they have to get into this caper and stuff. And it's just kind of – it takes a while. So I'm hoping that the second half is a little bit more engaging than the first. But it's a very different kind of style of movie than I am used to. Although it's interesting watching something like this, you know, Hong Kong action movie, after watching Scott Pilgrim last week, which is a movie that obviously had a lot of action scenes in it too, and just kind of compare and contrast. But I am enjoying it so far. It's just a different pace than I'm used to. So,
all right. Oh, interesting. Your first Dragon Dynasty movie. Yeah. I'll see your Robin B. Hood and raise you Shaolin Mantis, a Dragon Dynasty movie I recently reviewed. And completely, like, there are two things that separate it from just being a generic, bland martial arts movie. One is the actual Shaolin Mantis training scene where our hero is exiled into like a field and he finds a praying mantis and he learns Shaolin Mantis Fu from this praying mantis.
And like, wow.
For real, like there's a, you'll see the close-up of the praying mantis, you know, like boxing away, and then see our hero mimicking his moves. So he is being trained by an actual praying mantis.
So it's like a Bug's Life.
It's just like a Bug's Life, right?
Okay.
And then so that obviously is memorable. The second one, lot of kind of so-so, like overly choreographed, methodical fight scenes, and he's battling the main bad guy, and you've just no idea this is coming. But all of a sudden, like, he grabs the guy's torso, and then they cut to like a silhouette, and he just rips out the guy's stomach, like this large intestine. He just strings it out. I don't. Rewind it back. What happened here? Because it was just like the most kind of generic milquetoast kung fu movie, and then he's disemboweling guys all the time. So, you know, these Chinese kung fu movies just sometimes surprise you, you know. So yeah, Dragon Dynasty, very good. Okay, Mac, what do we got next?
All right, why don't we take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com. We're going to click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. And we're going to go from there to the cover art gallery for November 16th. I'm just going to talk about what's on the list here and what strikes us as interesting or fascinating or just downright bizarre.
All right.
Dave, there's the new three-disc set of Avatar for you.
Fantastic. 80 minutes of bonus? Is that what it is? 80, like 60, 80 minutes or something like that?
I don't know.
It's like an actual, it's like a huge amount.
Yeah, it has the alternate opening where we actually get to see how messed up the Earth is in the Avatar world.
Ah, gotcha. Yes.
Just step outside, man.
All right.
There's Best Worst Movie.
That's right.
Is the documentary about the about Troll 2, which you can listen to a commentary track by this very crew. How'd you like that little
plug? That was very good.
That was a good plug.
Thank you.
That's a good plug.
Well played.
That was slick.
There's also the Complete Metropolis, which I've been looking forward to. It's, you know, the classic silent film, but they found something like 20 extra minutes of footage in a trunk in, like, South America. Like, some random trunk had all this extra footage nobody had ever seen before, and so they restored it, put it back into the movie. I think there's still more stuff missing. This movie just keeps growing and growing, but yeah, it's an amazing film, obviously. So I'm looking forward to seeing this extra footage.
My vote for worst movie title, to say really quickly, The Cunning Little Vixen. All right. What of it looks like the 750,000th release of The Fifth Element, apparently.
This is the Blu-ray Essential. One of many Blu-ray Essentials on this list, along with Ghost Rider and Hancock.
Does that mean that
it's essential?
Hey, and Air Force One.
That's right.
Which is, you know, a classic in my book.
Oh yeah. Get off my plane.
Do these essentials just mean that they're just like up conversions of the DVD? Is that what that means?
I don't
like
know.
They're not re-releases. They're just the DVD. And
you're really putting us in a tough spot here. We have no idea.
You guys have Blu-ray players, I assume.
First time ever seeing essentials. I guess it's just, yeah. I don't know. It's probably like the greatest hit, like the platinum hits of the Xbox. You know, they'd probably just reduce prices. Yeah. I guess.
I mean, it says these are the best of Blu-ray. So, take that, everybody else. That's Avatar. I don't see a Blu-ray essential release of Avatar, James Cameron.
So we got, what is this? So the Office Overtime? Are those like the online, like,
yes,
micro things?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
Yeah, those are the shorts from online, which are, I don't know. I've seen some of them. They're pretty good. They're just they mainly star all the minor characters.
Yeah. Yeah. I see we also don't have a essential Blu-ray release of The Last Airbender, although it is out on Blu-ray.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of one of the more maligned movies of the summer.
There's Modern Times, the Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, that cover art is kind of freaking me out, though. It's kind of like he's evil cyborg Charlie Chaplin.
Let's see, Open Season in 3D. So I think we're going to see more of these 3D releases, but that was not originally filmed in 3D, right? So
correct. Filmed at all, Dave.
No, sorry. Sorry. You know, it's not a nature documentary. It looks like a Nat Geo documentary. It's like the most fun and whimsical Nat Geo documentary ever. How did that camera get that angle right in the fog with a bear on it?
It took 2 years of hiding in a duck slide to get that shot. It lasted 3 seconds, but it was worth it. Boy, I don't know what this is because there's not an actual cover for anything, but Robo Geisha. See that? Robo Geisha?
I do see it.
Yeah, there's the trailer for that's been on YouTube for a while. It's completely insane.
I don't want to know anything more about it other than the name because I think anything else would be disappointing.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. I've seen the trailer and it's been like...
All right, well, maybe.
Hold out hope, Eric. You know, maybe
all right.
Mailbox as an anniversary present as well. Obligation.
Oh boy. I was going to say you got the second season of The Twilight Zone on Blu-ray.
Oh, that's right.
Out this week, which is exciting, provided that more people are actually able to watch the discs this time around. There were a lot of problems the first one, so hopefully they got those ironed out.
Mac, did you have something too?
I was going to point out there's the movie you were just talking about, Shaolin Mantis, is on there. With a guy striking a very mantis-ish pose.
Yeah, it's very mantis-like. All right. Well, that being said, lots to choose from. Support our site by purchasing through DVD Verdict. We'd appreciate that. Most inadvertently sleazy-sounding DVD release of the week, though. We'll now begin with Eric. What do you got?
They Came to Play.
Nice. Mac?
I don't even know what this means, but I'm going to go with Cherry Viki.
Good. I don't know what that means either. Mike?
Sondheim.
Okay. I'll go with The Extra Man. All right, time for our ambush topics, where we just reel off some random topics we thought of that would befuddle and bemuse you. Okay. I think I misused bemuse, by the way. So, so anyway, random topics. I'll start off just because I'll forget it if I don't go first. Worst job to have in the cult, in a cult of your choice from a movie or TV show. So you're a cult member from whatever cult in a TV or, you know, a TV or movie, and what would the worst job to have in that cult be?
I don't know. Maybe the laundry guy who has to wash all the black robes at the end of the day?
Well, what's – you got to give me a specific cult.
Oh, I got to be specific.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, don't they all run around in black robes?
You got to give me – I'm not going to let you off that easy.
Nice. Okay, but
– just because it's November down there in Massachusetts.
All right, fine. The laundry guy from the Rami Top from Young Sherlock Holmes.
Okay, there you go.
Oh, that's good.
Cleaning all the Egyptian stuff. Yep.
How about the guy who has to clean the sacrifice rack from the cult from Temple of Doom?
I just scrape the meat off the bars.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like you know if you have a barbecue, you know, you have the tool, the wire brush. I mean, they must have something like that. I would imagine.
Like, just use some, you know, use some elbow grease, young trainee.
Here, I harvested it from this elbow. They probably have.
That's true. They probably actually had it.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with the seamstress who has to make the capes and the for Manos, the Hands of Fate's cult. The he has these robes that look like a giant hand. So I'm sure that takes a lot of sewing to get that done.
Let's see. I'm going to go with the thuggy cult as well because those guys are a lot of fun. But the heart disposal engineer. You know, all those – you got to figure that sacrifice has to be a regular thing. So how many hearts is Mola Ram ripping out? You know, so those got to go somewhere.
So. I mean, I think they have to raise money for, you know, all the it has to cost a lot to fuel that fire.
That's true. Or maybe like all their sacrifice victims are organ donors.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Like, you know, they got a bunch of coolers in the back, and they just kind of toss the heart in, rush it off to the Asian black market.
No, that's right. There you go.
Just like coming back to that like the best joke from The Walking Dead last episode. When they're tearing apart that body and the kid's like, he was an organ donor.
Ah, yes. All right, Mike, why don't you go next then?
All right then. Okay, a parody that you might have seen in like a show or a movie that at the time when you saw it, you didn't know it was a parody until like years later.
Sounds like you've got a very specific instance. I did. And you're forcing us to work with that.
There's one.
Well,
there's one
a lot. There's a lot of – I mean, this happens a lot to people where they see something funny in a show and they don't realize that this is a parody of something else.
Is this payback for the whole take a letter off of a product thing?
Yes. So, absolutely.
If you can take a letter off of the title of the show that you're thinking
I'm totally getting a penguin score right now.
All right.
Okay.
All right, well, I can go on this one. It's not so much I didn't know it was a parody, I just didn't realize at the time. But in the movie Dogma, there's a fight scene aboard the train, and Silent Bob throws the villain off the train, and then he turns to two passengers and says, "No ticket," right?
Right.
And it wasn't until years later I was watching Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, when Indy throws the guy off of the blimp, the Zeppelin there, and turns around to all the passengers and says the exact same thing in the exact same tone of voice. No ticket. And everybody pulls out their tickets.
That's good.
And that's when it dawned on me. Oh my God, this was spoofed in Dogma.
Nice.
That's right. You nailed that one, Matt.
Yeah, see?
Wow. Crap.
He just triple Lindy'd that one.
I didn't need a stuntman.
Yikes. Man, that's a tough one here. Eric, you got anything?
I'm racking my brains on what happened. The movie UHF, trying to think of something.
That's a good one. Okay, you know, I'm going to steal that, UHF. Oh,
man.
When Weird Al is making the mashed potatoes.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, this means something. And I hadn't seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind that time. So now that's. So thank you, Eric.
Nice.
You're welcome.
You mean to tell me, Eric, that you get every reference in every episode of The Simpsons?
No, probably not. But I don't know.
To me all the time at The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah. Problem is, I don't know that I haven't gotten them yet, Mike.
Sorry.
The other one I thought of in UHF, because I hadn't seen the movie at the time, was the whole "Badgers, we don't need no stinking badgers" line.
Oh yeah,
I hadn't seen it. Sierra Madre before.
That's very good. Yeah, that's a great character in UHF. There's a bit you would never see replicated in that movie. Like a guy just throwing live poodles up the window, and then you cut to a mountain of dead poodles.
Let's see if poodles can fly. That's a movie that's on Netflix instant watch too.
That's definitely instant watch worthy for sure.
My very specific reference was when I first saw Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey in like 1991 or 92, and I was in grade school. I had no idea that death playing chess with anybody had been done before.
Oh.
I totally was like, that's hilarious. I told all my friends. And then, like years later, saw The Seventh Seal and was like, oh.
I'm shocked that it moved you so much you were telling all your friends.
Yeah, those Bill and Ted movies were big in grade school. We were all about it.
Nice. All right, Mac, what do you have?
Okay, so over the last weekend, the movie Megamind debuted in theaters and made huge box office. So with that in mind,
that's good.
Our next topic is characters with giant heads.
Stay away from the movie Mask with Eric Stoltz. Stay away from the movie Mask.
All right, I got one. I'm pretty sure that the aliens in the original pilot for Star Trek, the cage, didn't they have giant kind of throbbing, pulsing heads or something?
Yes, they did. Yeah, those kind of psychic, telekinetic guys. Yeah.
I'm
trying to remember what they were called. I should know this.
You should. Oh, yeah, the Talosians, apparently.
Oh, very good.
Oh, there you go.
Don't thank me. Thank Wikipedia.
I don't know what they're called, but the Neverending Story, the movie, we all know the Neverending Story. In the beginning, they're calling that special counsel, to say that the princess is sick, and they got all those weirdos hanging around the top of the Ivory Tower. There's a couple guys that are just, all heads. They're just like walking heads, pretty much. You with me? You understand what I'm saying there?
Oh, no.
I don't know how they made it up the ivory tower. Like, I'm just, because the staircase is really terrible. But I'm guessing the ivory tower is accessible, so.
Big head accessible.
Big head accessible. PHA,
I'm going to go with the alien visitor from To Serve Man, the Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, sure.
The giant guy he's got that huge head and he can't talk. He just sort of, he speaks in their minds. because everybody who has a giant head doesn't want to talk. They just talk through their minds. So, yeah, that guy, the giant man.
Cool.
All right, Mac, what do you got?
First of all, the honorable mention is, of course, MODOK from Marvel Comics.
Who's going to be in the upcoming Marvel versus Capcom fighting game? By the way.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he's in there.
Nice.
He's just a big head with tiny little arms.
Oh, yeah. He's in there.
And of course, as we all know, MODOK originally stood for Mobile Organism Designed Only for Killing. But aside from him, I also went with Dib from Invader Zim, which was the great running joke from that series about how Dib had such a huge head. All the other characters are commenting about how gigantic his head was. And there was even a key plot point in the Halloween episode when Dib's head was so huge he had to journey inside his own head and confront his own psyche in order to save the day. They never really explained how that was like scientifically possible, but it's just that his head was so huge he's able to actually go inside his own head. So,
all right.
You know, it's a big head when that happens.
Absolutely. I have no familiarity with Invader Zim. Is that
really?
Yeah,
that's great show. It's awesome.
Still on, or is that run its course?
No,
it's, or did it air like 40 years ago?
It was around 2001, I guess, and it ran for 3 seasons. Although a lot of the episodes didn't air, it was very troubled behind the scenes. Lots of strife between the producers and the network.
Lots of drugs.
Yeah, that too.
Lots of drugs.
But, it's created by kind of underground cartoonist Jonan Vasquez, and so it's a lot edgier than most other Nickelodeon shows.
Gotcha.
But all 3 seasons are available on DVD. You can find them pretty easily, and they've got tons of extras and commentaries and stuff. But it's a great show, one of the best animated shows ever.
Nice. All right, Eric, I guess you're wrapping it up.
All right, I got to start off by saying, Dave, I found a picture of those big head things.
Oh, yeah?
Neverending Story.
You did.
Yeah, I found a picture of that scene. Man, there's some nightmarish creatures in that.
That's a nightmarish movie.
I mean, really,
you look at that Motley Crue, wow. You really don't hold much against the nothing for trying to wipe that
out. Oh, not at all. It seems like a mercy killing for Frank. You have all these people with like multiple faces.
Yes, those people, yeah.
Oh, it's so weird. And then those big head guys that look like they're straight out of like some twisted Mardi Gras.
That's right.
It's terrible. Anyway, okay, enough of that. My topic, Park Rangers.
Park Rangers. Good one.
See. Well, anybody seen a Firestorm with Howie Long?
I was just thinking that. Is he a Park Ranger? I was just thinking that. That's a great one. He's a ranger. He puts out forest fires, right?
Yeah.
He's a firefighter, but I'm going to call that a Park Ranger because we need to talk about Firestorm. We don't talk about Firestorm.
Is that on Netflix?
I don't think so. Have you ever seen it, Mike? You would like Firestorm.
I remember the trailer because I remember he throws an axe at the camera.
It's that great a scene. It's that great. It's like I'm sorry, Mac. I'll let you continue.
No, please.
I get excited about Firestorm. I just love that movie for some reason. Like they just find ways to, because he's like, you know, he fights fire. He's a park ranger. He fights forest fires. And he's just like this lumberjack woodsy guy. And they just find ways to incorporate that in his fight against the bad guys, which are just your random assortment of thieves who are they escaped and trying to get out, you know. But he like he'll saw trees so they fall in the path of ATVs and stuff, you know. He'll just find ways to use his chainsaw in great, you know, great pragmatic ways.
Gentlemen, it is instant watch available.
Oh, we might need to do it. That might be our next top.
Nice.
Like he fights
because
guys
I've never seen it.
Yeah, oh, it's so great.
Me neither.
Fights guys with a canoe, I believe. You know, some deer antler. I don't know. He just he went to an LL Bean outlet and just took all the stuff and started beating people. But go ahead, Mac. Continue. Sorry. Great movie.
Yeah, yeah. He's there's. It's like I'm trying to remember. He's like handcuffed to the girl, but they're riding the motorcycle, yes. So she has to climb around in front of him to shoot the bad guys behind them.
That's right, and I believe they're chasing him, and he throws a chainsaw at the windshield.
Right, like, and it crashes through the windshield with, like, perfect aim.
That's right. All right, we definitely need to do a Firestorm commentary. And it's got, like, the greatest cover art. Howie Long just looks like he has no idea what's going on. There's, like, a piece of his head, and his expression is like, I'm an actor. You know, an offensive lineman. What am I doing right now?
This is a movie.
Yeah, I'm over on IMDb right now, soaking it all in.
Yeah, well, so, add it to your cues, gentlemen.
All right, very good.
Nice. So the girl is an ornithologist?
Sounds right.
Boy. Yeah. Man, too bad my topic wasn't ornithologists in movies. Should have had the same discussion.
And also, Firestorm, I won't spoil it at all. And I'll save that as a little surprise when we inevitably do this commentary. It's got one of the greatest and flat-out surprisingly goriest final bad guy death scene ever. And, like, overly complicated, but I will not spoil that. So.
Do any of you know what the tagline for the movie was?
Oh, good question.
I have it up right here.
He's got an axe to grind.
Something about feel the heat, like...
It's not bad.
No, that is, That is way too clever, apparently.
Is it a football reference? Is it like 10 and long?
No, because the movie is called Firestorm.
What is it? What's the tagline?
Fight fire with fire.
Love it.
Okay.
Fantastic.
Does he actually fight fire with fire? Because it doesn't seem like that would work.
Actually, he does, because that's one of the many things I learned. I mean, essentially, Firestorm is like the woodsy version of Cliffhanger, pretty much. We learned that you trap forest fires by setting tactical fires around it. There you go. So he actually does fight fire with fire.
Huh? Well, then that the tagline is not only clever, it is also accurate.
It is accurate. It's an accurate tagline. All right. Well, I'll take the ball that Max so... you know, deftly snapped, since we're going with football terms. And I'll connect it to another Howie Long movie, Broken Arrow. And that's where, what's his face? Oh my God. Well, Christian Slater. He plays the hero. He pairs up with a park ranger played by some girl. I can't remember her name.
Samantha Mathis.
Thank you very much. Samantha Mathis. And they go on to fight John Travolta, whose, you know, head bad guy is Howie Long. So that's how Howie Long got started in the action movies, and he wrapped his action movie career up with Firestorm. She was slightly useful actually. So that was good.
Wait, Howie Long was a bad guy in that movie? I thought it was. Why did I think it was?
Travolta.
John Travolta.
He's the main one, and then Howie Long was his.
Howie was the henchman.
Yeah, his henchman.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So those two versus Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis, who proved very useful because she. I think we've talked about this on a Friday filibuster. She. Like uncoupled the train car with great ease. This is quite easily she uncoupled.
That's right. You just pull the pin out.
Just pull the pin out in the red.
Just remove the paperclip. All right, I'm gonna go with. I don't remember the name of the episode though, but it's there's an episode of MacGyver. I mean, I'm sure every other episode of MacGyver has a park ranger in it somewhere, but this one is specifically he's in a park. He's camping with dudes who may or may not be. One of them is like an escaped convict. Do you remember this episode? And he doesn't know which one. And
yes, I do remember this. Yes, I do.
And there's like I specifically remember them going to like a park ranger station that's like under attack, you know, and somebody's like shooting up this park ranger station like on one of those stations that's on stilts.
Was it like a getaway? Was it like a detox? Or they were all alcoholics or some kind of like or drug something like that? And he was leading it.
Yeah, you might be right. He was like. He was certainly head of their group, and he didn't know them.
And like it was like a criminal or something who infiltrated the group, right?
Yeah. One of them was a murderer.
Yes, that's right.
And I think somebody poisoned the coffee in that one too. Like they put something in like poison berries in the coffee, and like some people died or got sick. Maybe they died. They probably died. But yeah, so there you go. There was a park ranger in that episode.
All right. Nice esoteric entry. I like that. All right, Eric, what's your park ranger?
I'm going with Vicky, played by Phil Hartman, the park ranger in So I Married an Axe Murderer, who gives the tour of Alcatraz. So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Yeah, I saw it forever ago, but it was a good book.
Okay. Yeah. Right, anyway, there's a scene where he and his brother? No, friend? I guess it's a friend, and they're on this Alcatraz tour. And Phil Hartman is kind of a humorless park ranger who, you know, they keep talking and he keeps shushing them. And he tells a story about, I think, Machine Gun Kelly and his kind of inappropriate story about him and his quote-unquote bitch while he was at the, you know, it's a jokey scene. Anyway, so Vicky.
Nice. I got an honorable mention for Ranger Joey Gladstone in Full House.
Oh, yeah.
His Ranger Joe, yeah. So,
oh, and if also, anyone had taken mine, I would have gone with the ranger from the episode of The Simpsons when Homer gets trapped by the avalanche.
Nice,
remember that?
Yeah,
yeah. He was like a very bitter ranger, wasn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah, he was. You know, he was pretty matter of fact. Now it's time to humor the kids. Your dad's gonna be fine. Everybody, put on your corpse handling gloves. It's funnier if you've seen the episode. Sorry, Mike. What were you saying?
No, nothing.
Come on. But don't be like that. Did you think of a product that you could make?
No,
last chance. Here, we'll throw some out.
How about you drop the USE in Full House? How about that?
That's pretty good. Although, is that a DVD sitting on someone's coffee table?
Like, that's right.
How do you work into a TV show?
It'll be meta. It's like in a Full House episode, actually. You know, there's a DVD of Full House.
Wow.
Full Ho instead. So.
Full? Yep.
All right. Well, tell you what, Mike. We'll give you the week to work on it. You can workshop it with your improv buddies.
I'm going to forget the second that this podcast is
over. Well, tell you what. When it occurs to you, post it on the facebook.com/Friday Filibuster.
That's it. That was my plan. This is what we call viral marketing.
Segue into the end of this.
Yes.
Lunacy. So
if you want to see what I come up with throughout the week.
That's a tease. That's right. And perhaps you too can join in. You know, post on our Facebook page.
Yeah, show me up.
That's right.
It'll be easy.
Sitcom products with blacked out letters that spell inappropriate words. There's your assignment for the week at Friday. Maybe should that's how about that for a new trend? Assignment for the week. Filibuster. I don't know. Well, maybe
if there's one thing our podcast has been missing, it's homework.
I agree. So there you go. Facebook.com/FridayFilibuster. Get on there and start posting. And FridayFilibuster@DVDVerdict.com is our email address. So thank you to Eric, Mac, and Mike, as always. A good time. Fun had by all. Stay tuned for the inevitable Firestorm commentary, which will be a barrel of monkeys for sure. And with that, Mac, take it away.
In your pants.